Hi, I'm Lee Rail, and thank you for listening to SeedPod. If this is your first time listening, hopefully it won't be your last. I interview what I like to call the change makers in our communities, the courageous, rebellious, inspiring people who are helping to move our world towards a future that is more sustainable and filled with hope. I'd love to hear from you, so please message me on social media or go to the SeedPod website and email me. If you like what you hear, please share it with your friends and rate and review the show. It helps me to know what you like and what you like listening to. Enjoy this episode. Earlier this year at Design Indaba, I had the pleasure of talking to, in my mind, one of the most influential designers alive today. Swedish graphic designer Jacob Trollback is the main architect behind the communication language of the United Nations 17 Global Goals, an ambitious and inspiring agenda for a better world by 2030. With a client list that is impressive, Google, Apple, Nike, Spotify, Volvo, BBC, ESPN, NBC, CBS, and TED, his team has received a slew of creative industry awards over the years. But now, since working on the Global Goals project, he dedicates all his time at the New Division, his sustainability agency that focuses solely on work that promotes new thinking and sustainable values. We discuss the Global Goals project and how it fundamentally changed his life, shifting his work focus, turning vegetarian, and causing a complete life perspective change. We discuss the weight of the knowledge of the global issues that he now carries and how he deals with that on a daily basis. For me, it felt like sitting down with an elder where I gained insights and left the conversation a better person. Thank you, Jacob. Good morning, Jacob. Welcome to SeedPod and welcome to Design Indaba. It's a privilege to be sitting here with you today.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here.
I just watched your talk and I left it feeling very energized and inspired. And I really value the work that you've done. I think it's exceptionally important in this world. I'm also sad because, you know, when you said raise your hand, how many people have heard of the SDGs? I think it was quite a bit less than half of the room. These are like top thinking minds in Cape Town, South Africa, and the world. And yeah, so I don't know where that leaves you feeling.
Well, I think it's because it's a very complex situation. First of all, I just got to say, to get these goals through and get all 193 countries to sign off on them. Granted, they're not binding, but they've all said that in spirit, yeah, this looks good. We should work for these goals. So I think that that's a huge initial achievement. But then, of course, with a lot of good things that is done within institutions or organizations is that they tend to stay there. And I think that this is really lethal because there is so many good thinking, so many people doing good thinking for creating a better world, a sustainable world. We have new technologies, we have new ideas for social context. We have new, there is just a myriad of things, but they're really poor at communicating. Mm. And that's because everyone who's really good at communicating, they're like, hey, someone is paying me a lot of money, so I'm going to work with like Apple or Verizon, Google, because then I can take myself and my family on vacation. And the UN, the budgets were cut, so you can do an excellent job there, but you're not going to get paid for it. And that's true with a lot of organizations that you just have to do it pro bono. And so the idea with the New Division, which is my Stockholm company, is to give a voice to the most important issues. And we're coming with 20, 25 years of experience in branding and advertising. And that's what we want to apply to now questions that it's not only that we care about them, they're essential for our survival.
Mm. So did you do all of that work pro bono for the SDGs?
I wish I could say yes, but we did 80% pro bono.
Okay.
There was like a money collection to get us some money, and Project Everyone, which was Richard Curtis' organization, who was a partner in this. They've been very supportive, and they did some fundraising that made sure that we could just keep going a little bit on it.
I think it's a tricky thing in the nonprofit sector in general. Like I know, for example, they struggle to get the best people involved in the organizations because the salaries are lower and they can't pay the right salaries. But I feel like that's a, you know, like one of the things you said on stage was that, are you wanting to move that?
No.
Was that we're still measuring everything by money.
Yeah.
And I think that that is the essence of the issue, is that, you know, whether it's a salary or what you're getting paid for your work, money is the only measure, but we do need it. So, so I don't know, there's a, we're off balance with it, I think.
I think it is interesting, though, that if you're looking at the money thing, because when you're in Stockholm today, all money is virtual. I have not seen a bill or a coin in 3 years, I think.
Oh, wow.
And when I come to New York, you can basically get around without dollars, but you'd better have some because people can get annoyed. But the interesting thing is that when it ceases to be something that is so highly visible and it's just like a transaction under the radar, thanks. Then it's almost like you're back to some kind of barter situation, because that just becomes a little mental loop, like, I'll give you this, you'll give me this. I'll transfer this money to you. And especially with this, with people are using like Swish in Sweden and Venmo in America, and you know, there are different transfer apps. But that's probably a little bit off the topic. But the I think the interesting thing in the place where right now is that, yeah, there's never been any money in this. And so there's been someone who has a brother or a daughter or someone who's like, oh, but she is good at PowerPoint. She can do, like, I mean, you have no idea how many logotypes I've gotten that people have sent to me that are made in PowerPoint. And I'm like, what's wrong here? And then I realized, oh, PowerPoint, that's a creative piece of software for them. And it's just there to put type on the slide. And poorly, I would.
I hate PowerPoint. I can't work in it.
Yeah. So we have, like, when you have said that we can't afford, someone just must put something together, then you have the whole, like, you just go from site to site to site to site of people who are not only have a fantastic heart, are really smart, but also work their asses off. And you want to just leave their websites as soon as you get there because they're horrible. I mean, the United Nations website, it's like, okay, but what do you want them to be? Should they be really boring and official, as I'm now talking to a government? Or should you be an organization that interacts with people and lets people in and is totally correct in everything? But you don't have to be boring to be totally correct. You don't have to be ugly to be correct. Ugliness is not being correct.
And I think that's the beauty of what you've done with the goals, is you've transformed them into, as you laid out there, from boring, hard to digest pieces of text into logo types and visuals that anyone can understand, which makes it more accessible.
I think we also hit like the absolute sweet spot with Christina, who is a Swiss designer, and she comes from that, like, it's me being Swedish. We're both fairly strict, but we're also both romantics in some ways. So we love things that are happy and that are uplifting, but we just don't like things to be too ornate and cute. So we did we created a system, and that was Christina. She nailed it almost directly. She's like, "Oh, how about these icons?" And I was like, "That's it. This is the style we're going to go." Because we knew from the very beginning that there wasn't going to be any shadings and stuff like that. Because these are graphics, and these needs to be reproduced and used everywhere.
It needs to be universal too.
Yeah, that was a lot of work to field test them and make sure that they didn't mean something else in different cultures, etc. It was very tempted for health to do something with like a red cross or something, but that's obviously out.
So you said in your talk that when you first got approached about the project, you kind of heard of the MDGs, the Millennium Development Goals. It didn't sound like you were that sure about them, but SDGs, you'd never heard of them before.
No.
Getting involved in the project, and I would imagine that you now intimately understand all the problems that we face, which is why you started with the trouble songs.
Yeah.
Has that project changed you?
Yeah, definitely.
And in what way?
I mean, this is what's so wonderful with knowledge. And when you turn information into communication, meaning you can touch someone with it in some way, you can get a reaction. It's very few things, except for communication, where people would be happy doing something and getting no result. It's like, you know, we're really bad at that. Mm. We're just like, the school teacher is just talking and all the kids are just asleep or on Facebook, you know, ruining their lives. So, but like, once you get communication that is like, oh my God, I understand this, then I don't think anyone could go back. Like all of these climate deniers, obviously they're climate deniers of such a plethora of underbelly reasons, with white supremacism and their disdain for women. And, you know, it's all tied into each other. And like, ironically, the flat earthers are also there in some way. So, but these are people who are just like, oh, let's. I think that like Buñuel or Dalí would maybe appreciate them, because they're like, hey, let's have a flat earth society. Or Mancinetti or some of the like futurists would be like, this is awesome. Like, can you imagine if the earth was flat? and they would deny, like, it's like when Wittgenstein said that if you cut yourself in your hand, you don't know that it's going to bleed. Like, yeah, it happened last time, but you don't know that it's going to happen this time. It's like, that's kind of deepest philosophical nonsense. But to get back to the point, I think that the interesting thing is that once you understand, then you change. You just do. And there are two factors in understanding it. One is that you have to understand what the issues are. So hopefully, if you study the global goals, that's a great entrance to like all the issues that we have. They asked 7 million people what was the most pressing questions, and that's part of where this comes from.
So that's the research that's underneath all of it. Wow.
Okay. Yeah. And then there's also from scientists and academics and like economists, like, yeah, we need this component also. So if you understand them, I think that that's the first thing. And then, I'm sorry I didn't have time to talk about this, but multiplication. Like, multiplication is like the biggest word in all of sustainability. Because, you know, you can do something that is not that bad. You can, like, toss something or buy something that's not sustainable. You know?
And we all do every day something to contribute to the issue.
But it's fine that you do it. Like, nobody cares. I don't care. But then you have, let's say, 2 billion people doing exactly the same thing. And then all of a sudden, there's no way that this is okay.
Mm.
And it can be really, really small things that you're doing. Like, take something that wouldn't be, like a paperclip. If everyone just threw a paperclip every day, like, the world would be overrun by paperclip in weeks, right? Because it's like everything just multiplies so fast because we're so many.
Mm.
So this is a cause for great concern. However, those of you who appreciate math also understand that there's the inverse of multiplication, which is division. And meaning that what little crap thing you change, it's just going to have immense effects.
If you can scale it.
Yeah. For me, like, I realized this many years ago in a public bathroom stall. I had wet hands and I took a paper towel and I was going to take another paper towel. And I was thinking, yeah, I usually take about 3 of these. Jump, jump, jump. And then you go, whoa. And it's a big ball of paper, and then you just throw it down. I'm one of those good people who push it down so they're not going to overflow. But that was the extent of my goodness there. And then all of a sudden I'm like, wait a minute. If I just use one instead of 2, I just halved the world's consumption of paper towels. That's how easy it was.
Or just let them drip dry.
Or just let them drip dry, which you don't want to do if you're going to go out to a cocktail party.
Yes, and you have to shake someone's hand.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah. But the point is that a lot of things can look hopeless, but when you scale them, when you realize that, yeah, going vegetarian, that really is important.
Are you vegetarian?
I am.
Were you before this project?
I were not.
Okay, so this has fundamentally changed the way you look at the world and the way you live your life.
I'm trying. I'm upset over that the soap and thing at the hospital. Yeah, at the hotel is plastic. Like, I do my absolute best to avoid plastic, and then like once a month there's this really good green juice in Sweden, and I buy it, and I'm ashamed. But it is being recycled. But everyone knows that plastic recycling is, that's a whole chapter in itself.
I think Greta's a perfect example of the multiplication concept that you're talking about. You know, she started just by herself sitting outside her school, and she's created a worldwide movement now, which is having profound effects, I think, on many levels.
Indeed.
So I agree with you. So are you still working with the UN on the goals in various other ways? I saw that you developed other materials and I don't want to call them products, but other ways of taking that messaging out into the world.
We have a lot of good friends within the UN. UNDP, we every now and then help them with this and that. We're also good friends with UNF and UN Women. We are discussing of seeing if we can get in a little bit larger and maybe help them overhaul some systematic things about their communication. Because it's like, you know, there's so much information out there. Mm. And when there comes something important from UN, it's like you need to build that credibility, and you need to build like, whoa, there's a new thing from the UN. And they really need to, you said I could say whatever I want. So they need to calm the fuck down, because it's just going out too much stuff all the time. And I understand there's a lot of people working there, and a lot of, I mean, the UN, have you been to the UN? I mean, the UN is like a dreamland. It's so many amazing people. You just meet people who are just, you're like, oh, I want to be like that person. Like, they're just so good human beings. They're working so hard, and they really believe in these things. Yeah, it's a cool place. And obviously defunded because Trump doesn't like them. Next.
Was the your agency, the new agency, the new division, was it born out of this SDGs project?
Yeah, you could say that. Because the global goals were made in, they were made in New York. And
is that where you live now? You live in New York?
Actually, now I'm mostly in Stockholm.
Okay.
So what happened was that when I started to work with the global goals, I realized that I don't want to work with anything else. And it was also at a point in the New York studio, Trollbeck and Company, where we had moved up so much. We had struggled for many years, and all of a sudden we were working with all the biggest clients. It's like I had a dream to work with Apple for many, many years, because I love Apple products, even though, for God's sake, they need someone new in software. They're just like tearing down everything they built. It's like, I have an idea. Let's make the smartest computer really stupid. I'm not going to go there. But after having worked with like the BBC, the Swedish television, you know, we worked with Apple, we worked with lots of cool people. I was like, okay, what would be the next like goal of working with someone? And I was like, I don't know, Prada would be cool, but 2x4 is doing such a great job there. And it seems with sustainability, maybe we should work that much in fashion. So I was just like, no, I'm just going to stop all of this other stuff. I'm just going to work with sustainability. But there's a big team in New York, and they are so talented, who are working with commercial productions. So I said, why don't you continue doing this? You know how to do this by now. And I moved to Stockholm and started the new division. So that means that I have one company that is doing like top class, groundbreaking, cool brand work, animation, motion work. We win prices all the time, and I'm just so incredibly proud of it, and it's also making money. And then I have a company in Stockholm that is, I'm also very proud of. We're only working with people who has some kind of sustainability message, and obviously we're not making money yet, but that's going to come. And it is a change, because it's like, you know, I feel like it's like 2008 or something, and we're saying that, you know, guys, this web stuff is really going to take off. People are like, we're not going to build a website. It's like, that's... obviously, there were some bumpy years there, but by and large, companies who said that, well, we're not going to go digital, they just disappear. And that's what's going to happen with sustainability, because it's pressure is building everywhere. And it's obviously Greta and Fridays for Future, that's incredible. That is just such a powerful driving force. But it comes from a lot of other sides also. And, you know, and investors are smart people. And they're looking forward and they're like, wait a minute. Like, what's going on with fossil fuel? They say that by 2050, there should be none. That's in 30 years. This business is going to be dead. Well, we got to find something else. And then, of course, they also realize that, oh, if you take the subsidies out of fossil fuel, then solar and wind is more profitable today than before. So we're at a tipping point where companies understand, investors and companies understand that sustainability is 100% necessary for the next generation. Some people call it Industry 4.0, but the Industry 4.0 is a very, very complex system that we've been tempted to work with and try to kind of simplify in some way, but change is happening. And, you know, I can say this, there's not a worry in the world. We're all on the right track. Everything is fine. Had we started like 25, 30 years ago, that's the stupidity of this whole thing. Mm. Because we are actually doing the right thing. I mean, not like everyone is doing the right thing. But it's a cultural change, and it's not only a change like we've had industrial changes where we've got from coal to gasoline to wind to solar. It's a mind shift, because you have to think like, okay, is money actually the really only way to measure our success? Because I can tell you this, I'm not talking for myself, but people say I'm plenty rich, and I feel like shit.
Mm.
So, and as I love the expression, who really wants to be the richest person on a dying planet? It's just like, well, there you go. Take your cash. Like, what are you going to do with it?
There's that old North American Indian saying, I don't know it well enough to kind of recite it, but it's along the lines of, when all the trees are dead, when all the fish are fished, when the oceans are empty and the land desolate, you'll realize that you can't eat your money. So it is that. It feels like you have a much more hopeful perspective than I do, because maybe it's because you're in Sweden, and I think the Nordic region is leading the charge in climate change, and living here in South Africa and Africa, it feels different because our priorities are quite different, actually.
Mm.
You know, we've got the highest Gini coefficient here. We've got massive unemployment, and those are the issues that take precedence here. So it's a tricky balance. I think sustainability means something different in every place because the priorities are different and the situations are different.
You're a country that has been abused for hundreds of years. It's like you have such wounds from that.
Mm. And deep wounds. Yeah.
And they're also the kind of, like, I don't know. I think that there are still too many systems left from what was before. It's still structures. Mm. But I think it's also, well, first of all, like, one reason why I'm positive is because the planet doesn't give a hoot.
No, we're going to wipe ourselves out.
And I was at a conference, and I was seeing deep underwater footage, and they're now at so far down, so the pressure level is like they have the windows are like 3 foot thick, or it's insane, and there's no oxygen, period, no oxygen. It the only thing that's coming out of the core of the planet is acid, black acid, like so acidic, it would just like tear your skin apart. And what do they find there?
Plastic.
No, they find living creatures living in that acidic environment. And then I was like, this planet is unstoppable. Bacteria and animals, living organisms, they're everywhere. And we're like, we're too many people riding on an elephant, and sooner or later he's gonna just like, and
check and then, us off.
Yeah, and then the elephant is gonna go on his merry way, and there's gonna be some years of just like plagues, like
coronaviruses,
and then the planet's gonna be fine, and then it might take another 100,000 years or whatever, and then there's gonna come some people after us, and they are going to have much better records than what we had of the Aztecs. They're going to be able to say, oh, it seems like to simplify information this way and to have TV show hosts as presidents, that we should probably, nah, let's not do that. Like, you know, so I don't know. I have children, and I wish for them to have an amazing life. But it's also, it is what it is. And the only thing we can do now is like the only way that we can be happy now, because since we're here, we should try to be happy. Right? And the only way I know that we can be happy is if we find meaning with our lives.
Agreed.
And with everything that we know, is it to find meaning in our lives to like work extra shift to buy a Bugatti? Probably not. Or is it Bugatti? Maserati? Some of the one car. Yeah.
Bugatti is a car too.
Yeah, good. I thought so. So I think that with that insight, we should just try to enjoy each other, because we built the civilization for one reason. If we hadn't built the civilization, then we could be warlords and just kill each other and be complete assholes to women, which men have been all the time. And you could say, but wait a minute, we've actually built the civilization that we're saying that, oh, let's not kill and rape, and you know, let's nurture our talents, and like I was going to say, get closer to God, but I'm an atheist, but you know, get to a higher level of being. I like that I ended with the gospel. I mean Aretha, you can't say no to her, and how I got over, I mean that's such a positive message. So and it was just going in my head after I had had all of these songs about trouble. It's like, yeah, we got to get over it in some way.
I have mornings where I wake up feeling very depressed, you know, because of the situation. I have mornings where I feel hopeful and I feel inspired, and you know, just listening to people like you and being at a place like this, I can't help but feel inspired and hopeful. Do you have mornings where you feel depressed or?
Oh, yeah.
And what do you do to kind of lift yourself out of that or shift that?
I do yoga twice a week, and that's usually those days are fine. I do it in the morning.
I also do yoga. It's magnificent.
Yeah. But I mean, there's a lot of things. Right now I'm under stress from so many ways because I'm trying to do too much to things. It's like, you know, I have family in different places, kids in college, and I have a studio in New York that's just about to move to another location. We just moved this weekend. We're moving to the Stockholm office, and we need to get in more funding. And I have too much work and traveling too much, and then now there's just like stupid things because we're going to work with the Swedish Expo 2020 pavilion and make that the most sustainable, like a propaganda hub for sustainability. And now I don't even know because there might be viruses in the way. And so there's a lot of uncertainties there. But music, that's like, and I have to admit, it's probably not something that I should say, like, but a glass of wine like makes that music also a lot better at the end of the day. And then I can measure my general well-being by seeing how much I've listened to music on a given day. And if I haven't listened to much music, then I know I'm sort of low.
Yeah. I don't know what percentage, but a good portion of your presentation was music. So I think that...
Yeah,
represents you well then.
Yeah,
it's a big part of your life.
Yeah, music is it's you know, it's the one thing that sticks with us. Also, when our memories goes, music is still there. It's like it's beyond. It's closer down. It's not something that's so music is. I wouldn't exist without it.
Do you feel like this SDGs project that you've done is your most important piece of work of your life?
Yeah, definitely.
So that must bring you a huge amount of satisfaction.
Yeah, but we're not done.
No.
And that's, you know, it's like if Radiohead had made In Rainbows and like, no, like a few people were like, yeah, this is really great. But like, it turned out like, yeah, we sold 350,000 copies. It's like, how would they feel then? I'm not comparing myself to Radiohead in any way or form, but like when you've done something that you know, this is solid. And on the one hand, the goals have spread. You see, I get almost every day pictures from school children in Africa that are drawing them by hand, and they're up in the space station and they're down at the bottom of this, you know, their flags. I mean, it's an amazing spread of them. But the fact that the targets are not widely used means that unless we start to look at the targets, nothing will happen, because then, you know, you could have like life below water. You can have that as a sticker on your car, on your SUV. Like, and it's like, yeah, I think this is nice. And of course, I want people to do that. Mm. But that has to be the opening for people saying that, okay, if I care about goal 14 here now, what can I do? So we've wanted to create social networks around the goals, but we don't get money from anyone. So, and that would be quite expensive. It's like, it would be $1 million probably. But so people could connect and learn and say like, hey, and it could be whatever, like doing beach cleanups. Or it could be to go to orphanages, or it could be to like boycott someone who's selling something that's not good, or support someone who's only selling local beans or whatever.
Mm. I mean, there definitely are philanthropists out there. Gates yeah. Foundation is one example that do fund these kinds of projects. I would imagine it just requires the right ear to fund a project like that.
I'm a little bit down on all of those foundations.
Oh, really?
Because there are a lot of them, and Zuckerberg took all of the money that he's made by selling our information. He has taken that and put that into a fund that I think his daughter in his daughter's name, and it may activate in the next 100 years or whatever it is. I mean, and then I'm thinking, oh, yeah, that's just a tax shelter because you don't have to tax for it. And the Gates, lovely people, I've met them several times, and we created the Goalkeeper branding for them and the name and everything. And but they have so much money, and their cash, their coffers grow every year. And right now, let's just spend it. Let's fix schools in all of Africa. Let's just do that. Let's make sure that every child in Africa has a school with a bathroom and a cafeteria. Let's just make it happen.
Let's just do it.
Yeah. And I find that there's a lot of, like, well, I was at something in Davos many years ago when Melinda Gates was like, oh, we're going to do this huge initiative for women, and we're giving $80 million. And I would just scratch my head, and I was like, $80 million, that's like 25 bucks at GoFundMe for me. That's not, you know, if it's an issue they care about, they can easily give half a billion for that, because they're just making more and more money every year. Now, I'm saying this from the outside. It may be way more complicated, and they may give to so many different initiatives. I know they're good people, but I don't think that everyone understands that it's now we need to make this happen.
What I strongly feel that's lacking, I think, in a lot of levels, is a united vision. Like, there's people going in that direction and people going in that direction, and lots of good people trying different things, but there's no, as a humanity, like, where are we going? No one can answer that question. I think those goals seek to answer that question somewhat, but it's still too complex. There's no, like, when you do a brand visioning process, it gets simplified. I feel like as a humanity, we're missing that simplified vision of what the future could be for us.
Mm-hmm. It's a very good question, because it's I mean, the moonshot was a moonshot because it was very well defined. You could just say, here is a mission, we're going to be on the moon before someone else.
Yes,
done. You know, to put up a vision for the planet that is similar to that, I think would have to, it's so contentious. And then you have the people who are making money out of the mayhem and who are actively working against it. And that's something that's new, because people who actively worked against knowledge and solid information before, they were just, like, they wrote letters to the editor, and the editor was like, well, here's a foil hat again, let's not post that. But now, with the algorithms in social media, means that they are just being amplified and encouraged to go even more bizarrely negative about things. And I think that on the one hand, I can say that, well, I guess we need to have this free exchange, but I don't think that civilization can withstand it, because civilization has things like politicians don't call other politicians like little Mike Bloomberg, or an even worse, Pocahontas. That is like, okay, if you were five and a complete asshole from a really unhappy family where you probably were abused, then you could understand it. But to have what's going on in American politics, which is the one I know the most of, it's just like, this, someone should just say, this can't happen. And where is the grown man, the grown people in the room? Actually, the grown people would be women, which is why we need to get, I'd say that women should just take over. I say nuts to 50-50. I say let's go women up to 75-25. Let's make sure that women have the veto right over everything. Because, I mean, we have screwed this up.
We have. Yeah. As men, we take most of the responsibility. Yeah, if not all of us, actually. Yeah. I agree with you.
Yeah. So, women, I mean, they can't take over soon enough. It's just...
One of the other people I interviewed yesterday, I think, she was talking about something called soft power, which is a feminine approach. She was comparing America to where she was told that if she studied architecture, she can't have children. Like, it's not an option to have an architectural career and have children. Whereas she's living in Denmark, and the two people she looks up to are both women leaders in the company, and they both have families and children, and lead with a different kind of power. And it's that, I think, illustrates the difference that you're talking about.
Yeah.
It's a greed, power, money versus...
But that whole thing is like, if you want to be a man, if that is important to you, be a grown man. Don't be an insecure little shit. Don't be someone who gets your power from pushing other people down.
Yeah.
Don't get one that gets your power from making money in such a way that you're ruining other people's lives. Don't get power because you're the boss of your wife and your children. But this is people who have really small egos. They are just, or they have big egos and then have a really small self-confidence. They're just fragile. And I think that women are standing like with 2 feet on the ground, and men are just like, oh yeah, well, I'm going to win there, I'm going to be on the top. And because we've promoted that stuff since hundreds of thousands of years. I think it's both nature and nurture, but it doesn't matter where it came from. Now it's all culture, and we can't change our DNAs, but the culture we can change. I think we need to be aware of some behaviors that may stem from DNA, but all the remedies are cultural.
I couldn't agree with you more. I'm part of an organization called the Mankind Project. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's about men's work, and it's about healing of men's wounds and taking responsibility for our actions and being accountable for the things that you do in the world. And it's a different kind of masculinity, which is, I feel, strongly called for in today's world. And I think things like that give me some sense of hope, but it's still so small. And
it's like,
we need scale again.
I mean, we can go way into therapy land here, but but I mean, why is it so important for men to always be special? It's like, you know, because if everyone in the world were special, then nobody would be special. Like, you can just be yourself. Like, try to be yourself and try to not like show off all the time. And try to not be the person who, like, got the nicest whatever it was and best of this. Just, like, slow down and say, I'm just going to be one with you guys and you girls. And I don't need to take charge of this operation. Like, it's for me, it was because my ex didn't have a driver's license. So I've been driving all the time, which is like, and I like to drive. I had a nice car, so I like to drive. But sometimes I'm like, I don't want to drive. And now I never drive. I'm just like, oh, this is so nice. I can just be a nobody in the back seat. I don't have to be like, oh, making, like passing this car, making sure we're getting to the right place. I mean, it's, for a man, I think it can give so much to just let your guard down and let just sometimes other people take care of things. Not take care of you, but take care of things, because you should take care of yourself.
I think that I saw a quote the other day saying, if you want to change the world, start with your family. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a, if we each take care of ourselves first and heal ourselves so that we're behaving in the right way,
yeah,
and then that rolls out into our family, then I think that's maybe a good place to start.
Yeah, I really do. It can only start there. And there, maybe one of, like, what was an eye-opener for me was that all our behaviors are contagious. So if you go to the office and you've had a shitty morning, and let's face it, everyone has shitty days. Like, there's not a single person who's not miserable from time to time. That's just part of the human condition. So you have a shitty morning and you go into work. And I've been like doing it many years that I was like, I brought that with me into the office. And everyone knew immediately, like, whoa, maybe not talk to Jacob before lunch or something. And then I just realized that it's not me. It's a virus that's affecting that my whole environment. So now I make sure to stop before I go in to the office or to home or someone's home. And I'm like, am I now a person who wants to, am I good contagious or bad contagious? And it's pretty easy. You just decide, like, I'm going to come here with joy. I'm going to come here with good vibration. And in a second, you get that back. And then you're like, why was I in such a bad mood? This is where I want to be. I want to work with these people who smile at me and say, hey, let's figure that stuff out. Didn't you have a boring presentation coming up? Let's do it instead of just something else. So the mind, it's everything, and that we have control.
I think that is the perfect way to wrap up. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. Thank you. You've been listening to Seed Pod with me, Lee Rail. Thank you so much for your attention. I know that it's not always easy to listen to a conversation that's an hour or more these days with time being so pressed. So I really appreciate those who are listening to these conversations, and I hope you're getting as much value out of it as I am. I'm walking away with nuggets of wisdom from each conversation, and I trust that you are as well. You might have noticed that there's a little bit more noise in the backgrounds of the recordings. That's because I'm not in a studio anymore. I have gone on my own with a mobile setup, and so I'm doing it all myself. I'm recording myself, I'm editing myself, and so if there's any feedback, if it's too loud, too soft, too noisy, let me know. If you have any feedback as to the content of the podcast, love to hear from you. Otherwise, keep listening, keep sharing, and keep being inspired.